Now's the time to travel and be with the people you care about the most. And at Holiday Inn and Holiday Inn Express, we're helping you be there for less. Save at least 25% at thousands of hotels worldwide if you book by September 24th. You won't want this moment to pass you by. So book today at holidayinn.com. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Ultimate Podcast. My name is Chris McGlynn, host of the show. Happy 4th of July. It's Independence Day in the United States, and as a result, I actually have a very fitting guest for this episode, Daryl Stanley, coming to you from the nation's capital, coach of Washington, D.C. Truck Stop. We'll be talking about the upcoming club season and what his expectations are, as well as what his approach is heading into the U24 Worlds Tournament. He's an assistant coach for the men's team for the United States, so very exciting to be talking to him in just a little bit. Plus, we'll be covering the PUL Championship weekend, the inaugural final weekend, and the Premier Ultimate League season. Very exciting stuff. Lots of great games there. We'll dive in and break down some of the action, as well as give a top-level view at the top teams and what we expect to see from them in the club division, which is not that far away. We're only about a week and a half out from the start of the Pro Elite Challenge, so getting very close to the start of meaningful club play. Very exciting stuff. Let's start, though, with the Premier Ultimate League. The PUL Championship weekend down in Atlanta just came and went. An exciting weekend. If you look at just the result, which was the Medellin Revolution winning the title, you might think it went to chalk, exactly how everyone expected. However, it ended up being a lot more exciting than that. Both semifinal games went into double overtime, which mean that we got universe point scenarios, essentially. We had both teams playing at a sudden-death finish. New York ended up falling just short against Raleigh, and Atlanta could not get the home crowd excited by pulling off a win and a shocking upset against Revolution. But still, two great games that really set the table for the final. Unfortunately, the final not quite as competitive, not quite as close. Revolution pulling away and coasting past Raleigh to win the inaugural title. But congratulations to Medellin. It was really a fun season all the way around, but this was a great showcase. The Premier Ultimate League Championship weekend, it really was a lot of fun to watch. Those games in the semifinals were incredible, and overall, the final game had a lot of skill. It was very entertaining ultimate, even though the game was ultimately not that close. So in the end, still a very fun weekend to watch. And one last thing I will note here, if you want to check it out, the PUL was featured in the New York Times. There was an article written about how it came to be and kind of what the origins were, among other things. It was very interesting. Great read. So if you want to check it out, it's been floating around social media. I shared it on my Facebook page, I know. There's a couple different places that you can probably find it at this point. But yeah, definitely worth a read, and always cool to see Ultimate featured in a major publication like that. So with that in mind, let's move to the club season, which is, like I said, really not that far away. We're closing in. Most of the major rosters are out by now. We've seen roster announcements from just about every team. There's a handful missing in each division that'll probably be filled in over the next couple of weeks. But there's some major storylines here for sure. It's going to be an interesting year in the mixed division. Mixtape and Amp, the two teams that met in the finals last year, both lost some talent. Mixtape losing Burt Abbott and Khalif El Salam, namely. Amp losing both Carolyn Normile, Carolyn Normile and Nico Lake, among others. Calvin Tricellini will not be back. It's going to be an interesting year for Amp. However, they do get Michael Ng back after he played a year with Pittsburgh Temper in the men's division. So, and they've looked good so far. They had an early season Amp invite that they do every year, and ended up winning the tournament there. They ended up beating every team they faced, which was some good competition. They faced Space Heater. Space Heater undergoing a bit of a youth movement this offseason. They lost some big pieces. Joe Freund, Claire Desmond both left. Ted Scyther gone as well. But they've added on a number of players from the area in D.C. to come play for that team. So I don't think Space Heater will be going anywhere. We've seen, it seems like Slow White has reloaded, the biggest addition being Tanner Johnson coming back after a year playing with Boston Dig. He'll be back playing for Slow White this year. Boston Mixed Ultimate might be the deepest that I can remember it ever being. between Snake Country, Slow White, Wild Card, and then even a couple of other teams that are just below that tier. Those three teams all have legitimate title, you know, probably Nationals aspirations, and then even beyond that. You know, keep in mind that last year it was really just a wild regional tournament that kept all three of those teams from making it to Nationals. So in the end, though, really, really fun kind of looking division, and expect Dragon Thrust will be right back in the mix. Didn't have a ton of major losses, a little bit of roster turnover there, but that's to be expected. It happens almost every single year. But the core for Dragon will be back as well in Minneapolis. Looking at the women's division, this is going to be business as usual, I think, for the top four. Brute Squad might be the favorite. They didn't really lose a whole lot. Shelly Cohen is probably the biggest name to leave. Claire Trope, though, of Seattle Riot, and of course Dartmouth, playing with Dartmouth Ultimate in the college division, is joining up, which is a huge addition. Even though she might only be 20 years old, she is one of the best players in the world in the women's division. She'll be competing out at U24s as well, so you'll get a chance to see her going out and competing at a very high level very soon. As well as you look at the rest of the division, Molly Brown adds Burt Abbott, so Abbott moving from Mixtape, now going to play for Molly Brown, and Rena Kawabata as well, those are two big additions. They didn't lose a whole lot, as most of this team is still back. We're still going to see Claire Chastain and Jesse Schaffner and Manuela Cardenas and Lisa Bacathley. All of those key pieces will be back. That team is going to be very good once again, and you have to wonder if now maybe these few last additions that have some championship and deep title run experience will be able to maybe get them over the hump. It'd be really interesting to see how Molly Brown shakes up over the course of the year. Riot, despite the fact that it lost Troop, does add Valeria Cardenas, so Manuela's twin sister will be competing now in the division and probably facing off against her a time or two, which will be very exciting to watch. Looking forward to seeing how that all comes about. Linnea Sue and Abby Abramovich, as well as Samia Ishmael, who was a Callahan nominee from Western Washington this year, all joining Riot as well. So Riot picking up some good additions over the course of the offseason. And like I said, Trope kind of being the biggest loss that they had. Looking at Fury, Claire Desmond is back. Julia Butterfield is a big addition for them as well, who joins from Nightlock. So those are two big names to join that team. Desmond played last year with Space Heater, so back in the women's division and back playing with Fury. However, this will be the first time in almost 15 years that we're not going to see Alex Snyder playing for this team, which will be really bizarre. Obviously, she was a fixture for San Francisco Fury, a huge part of the reason why they were so wildly successful for so many years. Probably the greatest handler to ever play in the women's division. So definitely going to be weird not seeing Snyder out on the field for Fury, but still this team more than capable of defending its title without Snyder. Still an odd thing for us to get used to as we get ready to watch Fury this season. And now that's kind of the top four. Those are the semifinal teams from last year. Now Scandal seems like they're starting to close the gap a little bit. Scandal's been right there for the last several seasons, but has always been kind of on the outside looking in. This year, though, they add Carolyn Normile and they add Robin Fennig. Those are two great players. They did lose Kristen Franke, you know, so there is definitely still some losses involved here. But those are two really big adds and players that have played at an extremely high level and are capable of taking over games at times. So you cannot discount how important those additions will be. And have to wonder if maybe Scandal finally has enough to take out one of those top four teams and to really make the semifinal round or the spots for the semifinal round interesting. They've been really close the last few years, and I have a feeling that they are even closer this year. I'm excited to see just how close they are, if maybe they finally close the gap enough that they're really into that semis conversation once again. Looking at the men's division, this might be the deepest group of semifinal contenders that we've seen in at least a decade. I'm not really sure. Admittedly, I've only been playing Ultimate for a decade, and a decade ago, I didn't really know what the club division was. So, still learning a lot about the history of it. But still, this group of teams that is really, I feel like, unbelievably deep and uncharacteristically deep for this division. There is the super team at the top. There's no question that New York Pony is the super team at the top. They kept together the same core, which includes Mikkel and Kotcher and Harper Garvey and Ben Yod and Ben Katz and everybody else that you associate being great with that team. However, they also had Grant Lindsley. They bring Alex Thorne out of retirement, and then they also go out and pick up MKBHD and Jabron Mizer and Jeff Babbitt. This team is going to be loaded this year. I'm very excited to see how it goes. You add in a veteran presence like Jack Hatchett coming over from Ironside previously. This team is a title favorite. They are the whatever you want to call them. They are the favorite to win the whole thing at the end of the year. And I don't see that going any other way. I figure Pony will win. However, below that, there's a lot of teams that are right in that mix. Revolver, despite the fact that they lost a lot of talent, Lindsley's gone, Joel Schlockett's gone, they lost some talent there for sure. They brought in a number of young pieces. Caleb Marion is coming in, and you're also going to get Adam Reese, formerly of Oregon, coming to play with them this year. I have a feeling that this team is still going to be pretty good. I don't think they're going anywhere. This is a very well-run program, and despite the fact that they've lost some big-name talent, it doesn't mean that they're now done. Like, this is going to still be a very competitive team. Ring of Fire lost a lot as well. It's been one of the big storylines this offseason. Jonathan Nethercutt moves to go play with Bravo. Bob Liu is gone. Goose Helton is gone. Brett Madzuka is gone. However, this team is still probably in good hands. There was a lot of speculation that Jack Williams might leave Ring after he played this season with the New York Empire. He's moved up to New York. However, he's playing at least one more year, he tells me, with Ring. It could potentially even be longer than that. We'll see. So he's back. Noah Saul's still there. And then you've got kind of the next wave group that includes Matt Johannes, Dylan Lanier, Henry Fisher, Saul Yannick. That team is still really good. There's no question that they have the talent and honestly, championship pedigree. A lot of those players won titles in college or competed for national championships. It's different at the club level, certainly. There's no question, but that type of experience matters. And the coaching staff is still there. Mike DeNardis and Dave Allison are going to have this group ready to roll once again. So it'll be interesting to see what Ring looks like. I don't think they're that far outside the semifinals conversation. I still think Raleigh is right there. I don't know that they're a favorite or a lock to make semis like we felt like they were in years past, but they're still very good, and I think they'll definitely fit right into the conversation. Now, looking around the rest of the division, I mentioned Bravo already. They add Joel Schlockett and they add Jonathan Nethercutt. This is a team that made it to that actually beat Pony last year at Nationals in pool play, so that already has to be a little like feather in the cap. Definitely a sign of good things to come. Bravo, a little bit inconsistent at times last year, so these two could be a stabilizing function for them. They definitely now move into the semis conversation. Seattle Sockeye is still right there after a semifinals run a year ago. They were probably the closest team to beat Pony. I can't even say that because Machine was right there as well. Machine reloading after high five folds and Mad Club as well. So now they've picked a bunch of talent in the local area. It's going to be a bit of a different setting in terms of what we see from that team. Kurt Gibson is still on his way back from a major injury, a shoulder injury, so there's a lot of question marks around this whole division. Double wide, not really sure what to make of them. Haven't seen a full roster yet. Usually one of the top teams in the division, but yet to be seen exactly what that team will look like, especially because now Houston Hip is back. That team was revived after a couple of years where it went defunct. And then, of course, Truck Stop, who we're going to be talking to Daryl Stanley about this in just a little bit. They brought back pretty much their entire core and then also brought back some former players in Nikki Spiva and Joe Freund, who both went and played in the mixed division last year. And they add Christian Johnson and they add Ted Scyther. So they add a couple of really good pieces to a team that was in quarters a year ago and is only 2 years removed from a semifinals appearance. So I don't know. Now all of a sudden you've got eight teams that are suddenly competing and I feel like legitimately have aspirations of reaching the semifinals. So it's going to be a very interesting year in the men's division. Excited to see how it all unfolds. Now, quickly before we get to Daryl, I'm going to talk a little bit about this U24 tournament. It's being held in Heidelberg, Germany. It starts July 13th, so the same weekend as Pro Elite. The reason I mentioned that is because that definitely impacts a lot of club teams in the early going of the season. There's a lot of talent on club rosters who will not be there at the beginning of the season for tournaments like Pro Elite because they will be competing out in Germany. This is not something we saw a whole lot of last season. We did see some weird stuff between AUDL commitments as well as World Ultimate Club Championships and how that affected the playing field at Pro Elite. So this is going to be another season where we don't really know what to see at Pro Elite as a result. And for those unfamiliar with how this all works, U24s, there are three teams that go. There's a men's, a mixed, and a women's team. Expect them to be the favorites across the board. They won three gold medals in this January of 2018 down in Australia, in Perth, Australia, to take home all three world titles. And these teams are loaded across the board. It's essentially just a college all-star team. It's really fun to see. It's one of the best tournaments of the year, tournaments of the ultimate calendar, because it's not yearly. It feels yearly because of how it's fallen the last 2 years, but usually it's every other year. So overall, though, it's a lot of fun to watch this because you get a chance to see all these players you saw compete against each other in college now taking the field together. So this is going to be a great opportunity to see how these teams match up. And don't get me wrong, there'll be some competitive teams. Canada is always good. They will certainly give the United States a test, as they always do. Last time around, we saw the Italian men's team. The Japanese women's team is usually very good. Expect to see Colombia put together a really solid team. It is going to be really interesting to see how this tournament shakes out. The schedule is not out yet. I was hoping it would be out already, but not quite out yet. Should be out, I'm assuming, in just a couple of days, because the tournament is just over a week away from beginning. So overall, though, it's going to be a great tournament. Very excited for it always. Should be a ton of fun. And it's always neat to support the United States in a tournament like this. So definitely make sure you get ready to support your red, white, and blue. It is an Independence Day, after all. With that in mind, let's switch gears now, and let's bring on Daryl Stanley. I'll be bringing him on in just a second. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everyone. I'm joined now by Daryl Stanley, the coach of Maryland, the University of Maryland, the DC Breeze, DC Truck Stop, and an assistant coach on the U24 men's team. So, Daryl, thank you very much for taking time out of what is a crazy schedule for you to come on and talk to me.
Oh, Chris, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be talking to you. You've got an unbelievable wealth of coaching experience. But before all of that, as the heart of every coach is usually somebody who played the game. So tell me a little bit, how did you find the sport when you first got into Ultimate?
Yeah, for me, it was like 2001, 2002. I am a sophomore in high school, and my best friend and I, growing up, we just played everything together, you know, roller hockey, basketball, you know, football, like whatever we could play, we'd play against each other constantly. And, you know, that friendly rivalry would continue, you know, into high school. And all of a sudden, one day, I'm on the bus going home after school, and I see that he's out there on the field doing something. And I was like, no. so I got off the bus. and, you know, that's when I discovered Ultimate Frisbee, and I really fell in love with it. Cheltenham High School, by the way, still has a team.
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah. The player that jumps to mind that from Cheltenham High School that I know is Jonah Wish, because I actually played against Jonah when he went to Cheltenham. But yeah, they still have a team there, right outside Philadelphia.
Yep. Yeah, Jonah Wish, absolutely, is an esteemed alumni. We've got a couple others, too. Steph Sessa is still active in the game, coaching. Okay. Nick Impalco.
A lot of people. I know these people because I'm not too far from Philadelphia originally. That's funny that Philly Philly scene kind of all everyone sticks around in the end, I feel like. And so you obviously played for a long time, but I think at some point, and even before you're even done playing, I feel like a lot of players look to try and give back or try and get involved at the coaching level. How did that transition go for you? At what point did you realize that you wanted to do more than just play and kind of get involved in the coaching side of things?
So, honestly, you know, I don't know that my ultimate career was as a player was really all that long. Because, you know, I play 3 years in high school, and then I play, you know, 1 year of club, and 2 years of club, and only 1 year in college, and then I'm like out of the sport. I just started working full time, and you know, around 2000, I think 2006 or 2007, I just turned into like a league player only. And I kind of drift away a little bit from the game and just focus on my IT career. I come back because, you know, Billy Maroon, a Philly legend, somebody who I played with when I was playing club. He and I were on the same team, and he comes to me and he goes, "Oh, Daryl, you should come out and watch us play Ultimate, you know, the spinners in the AUDL." And I was like, what?
What are you saying?
Yeah. What do you mean? And, you know, he tells me all about Pro Ultimate. So I look it up and I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Wow. I didn't know that the sport had gone here. And then I saw, like, Next Gen and, you know, the UPA transitioned to USAU. And, like, the fact that video was now available of, like, many high-end club games. And I was just like, wow. Okay. We've really gone. This is so different. I mean, I stopped because I saw it as something of a dead end. You know, just like a personal, like, thing that you do. And it's, like, only for your own amusement. You're a legend only in your mind and your team's mind. Because nobody was there. Nobody witnessed it. So, I think once I saw that, I was like, oh, like, Ultimate's really changing and taking advantage of some new technology and new stuff. So I try to get back into playing. I'm at that point, I'm very overweight for Frisbee. So I work on, like, you know, I call it my defattening phase. And, you know, I got a little bit slimmer. So 2013 comes around, and I kind of had, like, this two-year plan. So year one was, you know, re-expose myself to and test myself at these tryouts to see how far away I am. Because, like, I think year two, 2014, I could probably pull this off. Like, I could probably be back in good enough shape and be a top, you know, 25, 50 player in the city, which would be good enough to play because there were two teams at the time.
Sure.
So I tried out for the Phoenix in 2013, and, you know, I was okay, but definitely not ready. And they came up to me afterwards, and they're like, you know, Dave Brandolf actually came up to me like, hey, we don't think you're going to make it as a player, but, you know, you used to be a captain of teams, of club teams, and, like, you know, you were my captain at one point, and, like, would you want to be a coach for us? I was like, all right. So that was 2013, and I was an assistant coach under Brandon Redden for the Philadelphia Phoenix, and that's how it got started.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So you come in kind of expecting to play and immediately transition into a coaching role. I mean, I know David Brandolf just as a player in the Philly area for a long time, was part of that pro scene for a good deal of time as well. But, I mean, I think that's really neat that immediately, even though, you know, you weren't quite there yet, they were willing to be like, hey, like, we know that you've got the experience and kind of the, I don't know, I guess the temperament to be part of this coaching staff. And that's fine. It's really interesting to go from a year before not being really much involved with the sport, not really playing much more than maybe some casual pickup or summer league games, to coaching at what is the pro level.
Yeah, it was quite a transition. I think I'm really fortunate that they took that chance on me, and at the timing too, right? Like, I think the AUDL was in a different place back then. It felt more like the Wild West. Like, none of us really knew quite how to do pro or semi-pro ultimate well, timed games.
Yeah, that's true.
The really
it
short points.
It took a while, I think, for people to figure it out.
Absolutely. And so I think I was really lucky to be at that ground floor, you know, where, like, nobody, you know, had any point of comparison. And so therefore, I think my newness to that role, and Brandon Redden was also just very good about, he had a plan, and his plan was very strong, and we made the playoffs that year. So it was just great. It was a great introduction, and I'm really lucky that it happened then and there.
Well, I mean, you also then continue to coach in Philadelphia beyond that, because you ended up going on and coaching citywide, which is kind of the, no, I'll say the number two team in Philadelphia, right below Patrol, and it's honestly now turned into a developmental program. And I feel like a lot of times people hear developmental program, or they hear those words and they immediately think that the team's not very good, but this is a really competitive team. I believe they're select flight this year, correct?
Yes. Yes, I'm so proud of my Citywiders. Good for them.
Yeah, I know. It's a huge thing. This is a competitive team in a deep region. This is, you know, the Mid-Atlantic region, which you still coach in now, but this is a really deep region. First of all, you know, I think I'm interested to hear how you eventually transitioned to Citywide, but then also your thoughts on, I think there's this interesting dynamic in Ultimate where people hear the term developmental program and think a lot of times it's not worth their time, it's beneath them, whatever it might be. But every year there are players from Citywide that get pulled up to patrol. And patrol.
And vice versa. And vice versa.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are players that end up dropping down if they, you know, if they're looking to rehab, or there are several players who just decide that, hey, you know what, I can't commit the amount of time, I'm going to play Citywide. And it's a really interesting dynamic where there's a lot of exchange of both players, knowledge, anything that goes on between the two teams.
Absolutely. I think, so Citywide happened, or my involvement with Citywide happened when Charlie Hoppus, who's the head coach of Patrol and formerly Messiah College, he came to me, like he worked with the Phoenix in 2014. He was brought on by Steve Leiner. So they held me back. They kept me around as an assistant in 2014 and 2015 as well. And Charlie was also an assistant in 2014. We were underneath Steve Leiner. So, you know, that was where we got to know each other, and we bonded a lot over that, and just kind of got to know how each other coaches, and that we had a kind of a yin and yang thing, but a mutual respect. You know, we definitely saw Ultimate from very different viewpoints, but again, at the end of the day, there was just like an incredible amount of respect and communication. So, you know, we could just really, we saw that there was some potential to partner there, I think, or he did. And so when he becomes the head coach of Patrol, which was like Philadelphia's attempt in 2014 to like, hey, let's rebuild ourselves, right? Let's get everybody back together. Let's try to have one, you know, top men's team in the city, because we had right. kind of gotten a little
this
dispersed.
This is after Southpaw. Yeah, Southpaw had disbanded.
Correct. Southpaw disbands in 2012, and then 13 is like kind of the Wild West. A lot of people went off into their different, you know, friend groups, and we sent no teams to Nationals and didn't come anywhere close. And then 14 comes around. Brandoff, Dave Bear, Patrick Lindsay. Jake Rainwater. I think these are the OG Patrol players. Anyway, they get together, Colin McIntyre, and they go and get Charlie, and he head coaches that team. So Charlie comes over after 2014's over, and he says to me, hey, we want to build a program. You know, we've got Citywide, which was an unaffiliated team, full of like I forget the name of our conference now. Oh, in Pennsylvania, the Southeast Pennsylvania Conference. What is that called? East Penn.
Yes.
So we were like an East Penn, that was an East Penn all-star team, so to speak. So just like where Drexel players had been, St. Joe's players had been on that team, a couple Penn players, things like that. So they decided that they wanted to be a part of this unification project. So they decided that they would be paired up with Patrol. I think they wanted the coaching, and they wanted access to, higher end practices and competition. So that's how that partnership started. And Charlie's like, hey, I'd love for you to be the head coach of that team. Go build that. Go make that work. So you alluded to the fact that like it's become a desirable place to play. I think the reason why it as a developmental team got or was able to pull players in was like, I don't know. I think we were just very, our brand was pretty strong. I mean, our song goes very far.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a Philadelphia known thing.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, Amp this year winning a national championship was yes. Very often singing that song. I heard that yeah. a lot.
It came up a lot. I mean, that was like everybody at Patrol was singing that. They took it as one of their cheers. Their timeout cheer, I think, is still that, the Citywide cheer. And then when we were cheering on Amp at Nationals in 17? In 17. That's when, like, there was enough of us together just singing this at every Amp timeout. So it got on film. It was pretty sweet. But,
oh, yeah. People know it now.
Yeah, they do. But for Citywide, it was just like I felt like we were showing people, hey, you know what? I was committed as a head coach. I was committed to trying to give them the best possible experience. I wanted them to get the feel of like, you know, how hard or the kinds of strategy that I would push a semi-pro team. I was like, I'll bring that to you all, and I'll help you grow, and I'll try to get you ready for the next level as much as I can. So, you know, I think that level of, you know, seriousness is often not applied to a developmental team. it's usually like for cast offs or whatever, or teams just sure. don't, you know, or maybe they don't have the depth of leadership to really just have two or three teams in it. So mm-hmm. honestly, it really helped me grow as a leader. I learned a lot of valuable lessons and made some, you know, incredible friendships. And there are still players there that are on that 15 team that are still there now, still getting their AUDL debuts. Connor Boyle's the most recent one. Just got his debut okay. for the Phoenix. So I just love I love that team. I love that program. And it really helped me understand that the club game is very different than my semi-pro experience.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you've actually gone and applied a lot of those things. I know you've coached at a couple different places now at the college level as well. I know you started at University of Penn. And more recently, you've been coaching University of Maryland, which has been a very fun thing for a lot of people who know you, but also just a very fun thing when you look at how quickly this team has developed into a nationals contender every year now that you've been there. And I kind of can't get anywhere else with this without having to ask you about the run last year. The five straight elimination games to reach nationals. How do you approach that from a coaching standpoint? How do you keep the mentality going through five straight elimination games?
Yeah. So, I mean, that day, I think we had a really rough Saturday. JMU, I think, you know, it was like one seed difference, right? Or two seeds difference. So sure. calling it an upset would be unfair to JMU in that regard. But I think that was a game where we expected to win, hoped to win, thought we could win. And, you know, we had UNC in our pool, so we knew that wasn't going to happen. But we expected to come out of pool play 2-1 because we knew that you could only lose, you know, twice, basically. Oh, sorry, three times in that weekend total. No. You can only lose twice if you want to qualify. The third loss would kick you out. So
pretty much, yeah.
You know, we expected that we would take those lumps later. but since we already used up our two losses in pool play, you know, we made a couple changes to some lines. But honestly, I just told them, like, this is our path before us. We have to come out here. I tightened up some lines. That wasn't the right move for this team. And I kind of used everybody again, opened up the lines a little bit and said, like, hey, honestly, like, our goal here is to survive. Like, let us really focus on that. Like, we're going to manage our energy, you know, we're going to manage our focus, and we're just going to have one game at a time. I don't want to hear anything about our path or who's in front of us, because it just doesn't matter. We're just going to do this here. And I think that we can do this. And, you know,
the approach.
Yeah, that was it.
The next game doesn't matter if you lose.
Actually, right? Like, these are common sense things to say, but, you know, I believe them earnestly. I operated with that mindset. Like, I didn't think about any other results. And the team, we were, like, very machine-like that day. You know, we were fortunate enough to get an early game. I think Virginia was our first game. Or maybe it was NC State. I think it was NC State. And they were really banged up. And, you know, had a lot of injuries. And we just, it was very quick. It was over very quickly. And then, like, at that point, it was like, oh, well, we have this time and we can rest and focus on the next opponent and, you know, just take care of our bodies. And we did that. And we just kept doing that over and over. It was like, okay, now Virginia. We just beat Virginia. Okay. I think I'm struggling to remember who's after that. Oh, no. I used to have all that memorized. All right. I think it went State, Virginia, Wilmington, and then Tech. Virginia Tech. So, yeah, it was really awesome. I mean, my players were going out. We were, like, watching the end game of, you know, whoever the next opponents could be. And we were, like, you know, just paying attention to who does what and just coming up with our game plan, how we could like, kind of combat what that other team was doing. And then, yeah, we just did that. Johnny Walden had an incredible day. Alex Liu had an incredible day.
I mean, two of them went supernova. Well.
Oh, they blew up. I mean, it was like they peaked. You know, they both peaked on the same day at the same time.
You need that sometimes.
Yes. So that combined with just everybody being on point. I mean, there were a lot of other really great performances, but I think those two were definitely the standouts.
I mean, that team, it was a fun story, I think, for everyone involved. I remember I was playing my own regional tournament, and I just remember at the end of Sunday, you know, team getting together, we're all going to grab dinner or whatever, and everybody was just like, are you guys seeing, like, what's happening in the, you know, the AC? And we were like, what do you mean? And it was just, you looked at the results, and it was like, what in the world happened in this region?
Yeah, I mean, it Georgetown, was, it was truly William and crazy. Mary, Maryland, oh, was, like, what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, between the manner in which the teams qualified, the fact that you guys ran through the backdoor bracket, just played elimination game after elimination game, and managed to make it in, William and Mary was definitely a shock. And then the fashion in which Georgetown won to go to Nationals, which was the absolutely insane greatest, which was caught on film and blew up. Akshat Rajan, yes. Getting that caught on film. I love AK.
I love AK too, my man.
Great job by him capturing all of that, and that blew up. And then it was you looked at that day, and honestly the chaos just I don't think could even really be. I don't think there was a way to explain it. I think it was just one of the most chaotic days of Ultimate that we've probably ever seen. At a regional level in a long time, so it was really cool to see that you guys were probably I think you guys would have even had the headline of the of that day had it not been for how that Georgetown game ended.
Oh, for sure. And honestly, I felt kind of, I think Georgetown had a nice pop for that. Christian Boxley, Matt Cullum, I mean, they were unbeknownst to me, they're now players that I coach. They're incredible, and what they did with that team was just awesome. I mean, like, their leadership and their I think that moment almost made their run look more fluky than it was. But I'm just really proud for them, and they got that pop. But I felt like our story, not enough people gave Georgetown their credit for their team. They were, I think a lot of people pegged them as like, well, this is one and done. But for some reason, they looked at our Maryland run as somehow, different.
That's fair. Yeah, definitely they were viewed in very different ways. And I think it was maybe just because of what everyone saw. That was our kind of window into Georgetown at that moment. Georgetown, like you said, they were relative unknown. And nobody.
Yeah,
really,
I mean, we didn't think, I didn't have them anywhere near making it. I mean, they had beaten us at sectionals for the championship. And I was like, I couldn't figure out what the heck happened. I thought that.
Sure.
I was so, oh, I have never felt lower than I did after that game, honestly.
Wow.
Really. I had that, and I had a couple. I just lost the home opener for the DC Breeze. Against the Royale in 2018. And I was like, okay. what's going on here?
Yeah, nothing like that to shake your confidence in everything that you've been doing.
Yes, it did. But, I got better. I learned my lessons from those two scenarios. Definitely, some incredible oversights on my part that I now take care never to repeat. So,
well, that I think is the sign of a good coach. And you mentioned the DC Breeze. You also mentioned coaching both Boxley and Cullum. You coach both of them on DC. Let's acknowledge the fact here that on a different show that I am on, I did not give you guys a whole lot of credit heading into the season. I pegged you guys to miss the playoffs entirely. And yet here you are with one game left in the season, already locked up a home playoff game. You guys have had a great run after a ton of roster turnover. And I'm curious to know from you, what has been the key this year to kind of getting this team to where it is so far?
Yeah, I've been asking that of some of my players internally, and Brian Jones from the outside, as a peer coach. I don't know. I think the short answers, or the answers that I come up with that feel pretty right, are, I've got great veterans in the right places. Rowan, I think everybody understands the impact he has for our team, and that's just clear and obvious how
He's
versatile he is.
He's the MVP for a reason.
Yeah. And I had a weird experience of watching him when I was coaching for U24s out in Colorado. The Breeze had a doubleheader against the Toronto Rush. It was the game of the week, and I wasn't there. And so I'm watching this thing, and this is like the first time that I think I I watched Rowan play, you know, from that angle, right? From a spectator's angle. Sure. And watch him like live, right? I've seen it on tape and I skip through a lot of the pieces really quickly, or, you know, you're watching for with a critical eye. But when it's happening in real time,
you're not watching as a spectator.
No, no, exactly. So here I am watching as a spectator, you know, not able to do a ton. I made one phone call, though, in the middle of the game. I got a hold of my head coach.
I was going to say, I noticed that the outcome at halftime and the outcome at the end of the game were two different things. So, coincidence?
Well, my call happened at the third quarter. So, I will say that any halftime adjustments are from the leadership that was there. Pete Mancini, and Nate Pryor, Rowan, David Bloodgood, those people. So, I'm not going to take full credit. I made one change. We got one break. But those players, you know, they found a way to win. But that leads me into the other piece, right? Those other names I just dropped. Nate Pryor, David Bloodgood, David Shields. These players, Jeff Wodach, like all these players have done a great job of setting the tone of our team and, you know, just being very steady and very consistent. Max Castle, another Breeze veteran. Like their play has been so rock solid. Their availability is so high. You know, I think that that means that our floor is high, you know, in any given game. These are our throwers, our decision makers. And then the players that we were able to get this year are, you know, they're very hungry. They're athletic. You know, they're coming to the Breeze at the right time in their careers. And they're just, this is like, they're all in. They're just all in. And, you know, I work with them, you know, every week to try to get them a little, you know, a little more aware, a little better, try to add another piece to our, what we do. But they learn so quickly. I mean, I try my best to get that kind of player in tryouts. You know, you try to like, Dutchie taught me this. You push the pace of a tryout, you know, like don't go slow in tryouts, because what you want to know is like, you want to see a player who, you know, can take your instruction verbally and run with that. And if they can run with that quickly, even if it's new to them, then there's a player that's adaptable. And an adaptable player is very valuable to me in the AUDL because of, like, the fact that in any given week, our lineups won't be the same due to injuries, availability, and whatnot. What type of player they need to match up against is going to change from week to week. And just getting people who are, like, able to just quickly pivot with a new direction is valuable. And so that's been one of the best lessons for me. And this is 2 years running that I've been with that mindset that Dutchie kind of instilled in me. And it made all the difference.
Well, that's a pretty neat thing to hear. I think that's kind of cool. First of all, Dutchie kind of helping you out a little bit there. And that's a really neat link. But then also just the idea of finding adaptability in players and kind of the different approach that you have to take for the AUDL, because it is such a different game. While the game as core is the same, there are so many different elements of the semi-pro game that changes everything in terms of how you have to coach. So I think it's really interesting to hear you talk about from that aspect of it. And you're heading in now to we're closing on the playoffs. You've got one last game against Toronto, which is going to be a fun one to watch, because I think that's those matchups have been good so far this year. And despite the fact that you guys have not beaten New York yet this year, you are very close to doing so, and probably the team that has tested New York the most this year. How close is DC to being a championship weekend team?
Wow. You know, having never been to championship weekend, but, you know, we've gotten to, let's see, my first year we made it to we played Toronto in Toronto for the East Division final, lost. And then 18, you know, New York beat us in that incredible rain game at home in the first
round. That was the weirdest fourth quarter of all time.
Yes, that was wild. No points, no goals scored.
No, not a single one.
Yeah, 12 minutes. And then, you know, this year, so I guess what I'm saying is my perspective is limited. But what I'll say is it's hard to know. I mean, I feel like there's an intangible quality that's happening with our team right now. We just have a lot of, like, buy-in. You know, we've played them really strongly. We seem to be getting, you know, more attuned from game to game as we play New York. I don't know. I think we're really close, but I think it's very hard because, honestly, playing Toronto in Toronto is really hard. and we've never won that game. I've never won that game. So I don't know that – I think the road starts with Toronto. I mean, and that means that the Breeze have to solve a challenge that we've yet to solve as a team, you know, in 3 years that I've been here, and then the year prior when they were also a really stacked team in 2016 and couldn't get over that threshold. So it's tough. I mean, we know that we can play well against Toronto. We know that we can beat Toronto in certain circumstances. And New York, we've got proof enough that we're very close. So honestly, I think it's clear that we're close. I just don't know. I don't know what it is that takes us over that hump. I don't know what it is that gets us to win in Toronto. I keep trying new things every year, and I have to see it this year that we have that answer. I don't know that we do.
All right. Well, exciting then to find out. We've got one last game on the schedule from the AUDL season for the DC Breeze, and then, you know, we'll have to see. I mean, you guys are slated to be, most likely, barring some sort of wild miracle run from the Philadelphia Phoenix here, you guys are slated to be the two teams that will face off in the playoffs as well. So you're going to get a couple cracks at Toronto. I'm excited to see how that goes. And transitioning now out of the AUDL and looking at the club season, because that's on the horizon as well. Pro Elite is not that far away. And I know you've got a lot of other commitments before you get into that, but this Truck Stop team that you've been coaching now for the last, this will be your third season, is that correct?
Yes.
Third season now. You came off of two really strong performances, semifinals in 2017, a quarterfinals appearance last year, and you guys kept together what is pretty much the same roster, but you guys brought back a couple of big pieces in Joe Freund and Nicky Spiva. You add some really well-known talent in Christian Johnson and Ted Scyther, and you've now got a team that has a ton of talent at the top of it and just a tremendous amount of depth. And I think really puts into a lot of people's minds that Truck Stop's now a championship contender. I'm sure that that's always the goal, but you know, what's your mindset heading into this club season?
For me, I think 2017 was like, you know, a year for, like, that was my first time coaching a team that had anything near semis or championship expectations other than the Philadelphia Spinners. So that was, and I was dealing with some of the, you know, very famous players, and it was like, you know, I was new to the city. It was very eye opening to me. It was amazing to coach or just be in the same presence of Alan Kolick, you know, David Cranston, like, sure. Nate Castine. I mean, these were names. Nicky Spiva, and names yet to be. Right now, everyone knows Alan LaViolette, but you know, we bled him in on that team to the national stage anyway, where everybody knows his name now. I don't know, like. After that season, I said to myself, like, or coming into that season, I said I wanted to make semis. Like, it was all about this outcome, and we got there. And I looked at myself and I felt a little hollow. I just realized that, you know, I think if there is an achievement, a goal that you want really enough, you know, and if you make a really good plan, you correctly assessed what's around you and your circumstances, and then you get a little bit of luck, then, you know, you could probably achieve that which you set out to do. But that may not be enough, right? That may not be as filling as you expect. And so I came out of that semis thing feeling like, wow, I chased this outcome to validate myself, and it did that. It, you know, I thought it would. But then I realized it didn't fill me up. You know, there was still kind of like, there had to be some other reason for doing this. And so I thought a lot that offseason. I talked to John Neely a lot. He and I were, he's a very thoughtful human, searches his soul very frequently. And I came out of that thinking that, you know what? I think for me, it's about, like, I just enjoy my iterative growth. I enjoy, like, finding a challenge and overcoming it. I like working with blank slates. Or even better, I mean, if you get the same people, I mean, it's not a blank slate then, and that's really nice. You don't have to reinvent everything. You could just keep kind of adding to it, right? Just adding little pieces to solve these little problems that you found. And, you know, that along with the relationships that I started to try to develop with my players was like the reason why I come back. So, long answer, but to come back to the 2019 season, I think for Truck, my goals... I recognize our talent. I recognize our depth. I see what's happening in the rest of the division. And, yeah, it's a great opportunity. And I will do my best And I think everybody on the team will do their best to ensure that opportunity, that we go after it with full gusto. And I think if we don't make it, I think last season proved to us that even if we don't make it to the end, you know, we don't make it to semis, we don't make it to the finals, we can still come out of that feeling really good about what we did and each other. And I think that's why so many people came back, because, you know, that left them fulfilled, but they want more.
I think I actually noticed that a lot too, the dynamic that your team seemed to have. Just being around Truck Stop a little bit at Nationals last year, it was loose, it was fun, and while obviously the team was super competitive and everyone wanted to compete at the highest level, and there was no question that you want to win every game, you could tell there was a high level of buy-in into just everything that seemed to be going on at a team level. And it was interesting to see. I mean, I think some of that stems from the players that you have in leadership positions. You've got Nate Castain, you've got Brian Cranston, David Cranston, and then Pat Steg. I blame Pat Stegemiller for the fact that I call him Brian Cranston. We did a game together of you guys for Ulti World last year, and ever since then, because Pat called David Brian the entire game and then realized like 90% of the way through and was like, oh, right. He was like, corrected himself and was like, otherwise that would have been some amazing method acting. And so now in my head, I can't get away from that.
Right, the association of those names. Yeah.
Yeah, so now I call David Brian pretty much every time. But so David Cranston, and then of course Rowan McDonald. And now, I mean, you add in, you've got a lot of veterans on this team. This is a team, I think, that they all, you know, the general feel is that while, yes, the goal is to reach a certain point at Nationals, whatever that might be, I think there's a process that everyone seems to buy into and a culture that has been built. And I think a testament of that definitely has to go to you, but also just, yeah, like you've leaned on a lot already throughout this conversation, just the idea of having these veteran leaders that are so integral to what you guys have built so far. I will say, I am curious to get your impression. To me, I know there's a lot of people who are pointing at Revolver losing talent. You look at some of the big names that have left there. Ring losing a lot of talent for sure. Some big names that have left there. To me, though, this actually feels like probably one of the deepest years at the top of the men's division at the club scene. I feel like there's probably a solid, I'd say, six or seven teams that legitimately contend for semifinal spots this year. I know that Pony is the kind of big bad overlording the division right now, but even without some of the top players, Revolver definitely has to be considered. You guys have certainly put your names in the conversation. I think you could point you look at Bravo this year with the pickups they've made between, you know, namely Joel Schlockett and Jonathan Nethercutt. You have to wonder exactly where Double Wide will stand, but Double Wide has been two semifinals and even the finals in previous years. I think it's a really deep, you know, kind of group of teams, and I'm not even mentioning Seattle Sockeye, who's a semis team last year and came a point away, and we've yet to see the final roster, but it sounds like Chicago Machine is going to be in the mix again too. To me, this seems like a really deep pool. Am I not assessing that properly? I'm curious to know what you think. I know you have your team, but you are also a kind of a student of the general game. You pay attention to a lot of what goes on. I'm curious to get your take on this.
I think you nailed it. I mean, you nailed every name and every team that I was thinking of. Your take, I agree with. I mean, you've got, when we look over the last couple of years, I mean, you know, my close inspection of Club Ultimate starts in 2015, I guess. Okay. So I will just kind of, I could really speak for some depth there. But, you know, a little prior, I've got some fan-ish or like early coaching vision into what was happening, like, sure, 2013 and 14. So my take is, you know, the super team, so to speak, has always been like a thing. And Pony is as super teamy as it can get. I feel like, you know, we've seen it a couple different times. We've seen Double Wide in 12. We've seen Bravo. Oh, other way around. No, I think I got that right. Bravo and Double.
I got that right. Double Wide and 12, Bravo and 14.
Exactly. Those were like, you know, super teams for sure. And then they went ahead and did that in the, even under the nose of Revolver. But
who just won every other year.
Exactly. Thank you, you know, whoever has Kurt for that season. But,
yep.
And Ironside and 16 was like, you know, I wouldn't call it a super team, but they definitely loaded up on experience and veterans.
Yeah, there was some kind of congregation of the general Boston town.
Oh, absolutely, and pulling in Kurt, bringing Jeff Graham back over. So
yeah, definitely
Jared Inselman for the borrowed time that he was up there. So it was like, it made sense that they got where they got. But yeah, Pony's that super team this year, period. And I think the rest of the teams you mentioned, Ring, I think that the youth will be served. I think that there are so many great players on that team that are, just getting out of college or are, been a couple years out of college. Like, there's just an incredible amount of talent and a pipeline in North Carolina that I think sure. that they'll be very strong this year. I mean, we can point at Nethercutt's loss. We could point at, Goose and Brett and Bob leaving and some of the experience that is. But I think that they'll be – I think they'll be very strong. I think they're definitely, I might even say semis probable.
sure.
Again,
I include them in that conversation. I mean, I think when you've still got Jack Williams and Noah Saul as your leaders, I think that gives you a really good, strong starting point to work with. And you're going to bring back some of the best college players that you've seen. I know you've been watching. Henry Fisher has been tearing up the AUDL.
Yes.
You've got the Callahan winner, Maku Johannes, Elijah Long. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Walker Matthews is the first time. Eric Taylor's on that team again.
There's a lot of players that have come. It's funny. The three teams that I think of are – well, I should say four teams that I think of. NC State, for sure. North Carolina, UNC. That has been a pipeline for a long time. Wilmington. Again, yep. All these local schools, and then Carleton, because that seems to be where the rest of them go. Because that's what happens. You look at Saul Yannick, Dylan Lanier, Henry Fisher, Eric Taylor. They all went to Carleton, but now they're all back in the area.
Yep, and they're dominant. So
they are great.
They're the best at their age group, right? I mean, there's just no maybe about that. So that's why you look at that and you're just like, yeah, they're fine, right? They've got prime aged. These players are prime aged. I think they'll definitely retool a little bit, but and the continuity of coaching, right? Denard is being there for so long.
That makes a huge difference.
David Allison's there now for 3 years, I guess. I might be underselling him.
I think so.
But yeah, so I just feel like they are in great shape and they'll be fine. And I think that their semis probable. I think we're right in there. It's hard to know. I'd like to think that we're in that tier with Ring. I think we're probably there. Sockeye is, I mean, they lost a lot of veteran leadership in this offseason. I don't know what that means, right? It's hard to know what, what BJ's role was for them in keeping the team moving, right? The process of winning and the process of doing Sockeye every year. You don't know. It's hard to know. Or Roger Crafts or any of these people. Danny Karlinski. I can't tell. Harkness, but it's a little concerning when you see those names come off the board all in the same season. And so I think they'll probably be okay. I think David Hogan's really smart. Mike Caldwell's been in this game forever. Obviously they have leaned into that. They're probably the fastest, quickest team in the division. I mean,
yeah, that small ball approach.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Xander Cuisenaitis is super fast. John Randolph is super fast. Jannan is fast. Free Child is fast. Trent Dillon is fast. It's like, it's absurd just how much team speed that they have. They've added Nathan Kwan, who's like, was the quickest in college, the most agile in college.
Yeah.
So like all these like very superlative, quick and fast and high stamina players. I mean, they could play a style. They could win on stylistic differences to even put aside the talent and experience. And that's why I find them to be very threatening. I think that they're semis probable as well. So I feel like Machine, it's really wild. Losing High Five, right? They're not in existence. Mad Club, not in existence. And getting a little piece of all those teams. It's hard for me to know, right? I think that – and how hard they pushed Pony last year. Double game point.
I mean, they was a universe point. Yeah, double game point. It was – I mean – it really looked like for a little while there that Pony was going to go down in the quarters.
Absolutely. And they keep Kurt, hopefully he recovers fully and just gives everybody a tough time, as he always does, as a great player that he is. So I look at that roster and I just think, okay, wow. Like, this is a combo all-star team. But I also have concern for them. Like, you look at double wide historically, right? When you start pulling in teams or players, sorry, from distances that are far enough that they can't practice routinely with you, you know, double wide's approach has been the training camp idea. Sometimes that, you know, they nail it and sometimes they don't. I think that, like, machine's going to have to figure that out. Like, how do we do long distance? How does our team do this when there are players who can only come for a certain amount of practices or not at all? So I'm very curious. I think that the talent is there. I think that they have a history together as a core. They kept so much of their core that they could probably keep their culture and add these pieces. But I think that'll be their biggest challenge. It's like, how do we turn from the homegrown team that practices and works hard to the team that's got, you know, a lot of imports that are not local, that are not used to us, that are not Chicagoans? Like, how do you do that? So
yeah, it's a unique challenge.
Yeah. So I think the talent's there. They could win the championship easily. But I just think that it could be tough. It could be tough for them to get that right. I'll be looking to try to exploit that as best I can.
Well, there you go. So now we're getting inside scouting tips into what you're going to be doing now.
Yes.
I'm actually going to pivot back towards what you were talking before about with Ring. You mentioned a lot of those players that are there that you've seen that they've got. You're going to get a chance to work with them actually just in a matter of days, a number of those players, as well as some of your own, Christian Boxley, Chance Cochran, and Ted Seither, all part of that U24 men's team that you were going to be coaching out in Germany. Knowing that you are obviously a passionate and supporter of the game and a coach who cares a lot about the development of players, what does it mean on a personal level for you to be chosen as part of now this national team initiative?
I was over the moon when I found out. Like, I mean, it's such a rare opportunity. There's only a few teams, a few levels, right? U20, U24s, and then the full team. And
yeah.
Yeah, I just take it as an incredible honor. And I think that, you know, there are so many times I was in the right place at the right time, doing the right thing. And that was one of those moments. I mean, my run with Maryland got some eyes towards me. And I just got, you know, I was just very, very lucky. So with that said, I look at this group and, you know, just being able to work with this, just this much depth of talent. Like, you know, it's different than club even, because, you know, Truck Stop definitely has an incredible roster, and, you know, I would like to think that we would beat the U24 team if we played them. I don't know if that's true. Come on over. Come on over to DC, y'all.
That's an interesting hypothetical. I'd like to see that happen at some point. That's almost like bringing back the Next Gen Tour.
Yeah. I mean, that's what U24 effectively replaces, right? Like, they are.
More or less.
Yeah, they are what the Next Gen Tour was, or would have been. So, if it continued. And I look at that group, and the difference for me is that, like, everybody on that team, in club, you got some specialists. You got people who are, you know, come from smaller colleges, who come from maybe not playing in college, who come, you know, and make it for different reasons. Whereas with the U24 team, it's like, no, everybody here is an all-star. And, like, it's an offensive dynamo, mostly. A few defensive specialists, but not a ton, because that's a star in college is probably not going to be able to focus on defense only unless they're playing for Carleton or UNC or Oregon or, you know, some Pitt, teams like that, the who's who, who get, like, stellar recruits all the time, and therefore...
Exactly. You know, regular semis contenders every year.
Exactly. If those are the only teams where I think... you get these defensive specialists. Cal Poly now. I mean, they've been producing.
Yeah, they're definitely. Cody Mills is building that into a conversation.
Oh my goodness!
Entering that sphere.
Yes, and with not the same tier of, like, youth talent coming in all the time. It's just they're making their players, which is amazing. But I look at that and the players that I have. It's like, yeah, this is what's insane. They're all, you know, they all get the game at the level of, you know, an elite player because of that. And you don't, you know, you don't really have to show them too much. You can kind of tell them what outcome you want, and they usually can fill in the, you know, the dots. So it's a very different experience, and I love it so far. I'm flying out real soon, and it's going to be wild. So
I'm really excited to see how it all unfolds. Obviously, it's one of the most fun tournaments of the year, and I think just usually it is. It's a college all-star team, essentially. It's really fun to watch, see all these players that we get a chance to watch throughout the course of the college season play all over the country that now come together and get to compete on the same team. I always think it's a really neat thing more than anything else, just from the ultimate spectator perspective. So excited. I'm happy for you that you're a part of it. Excited to watch as it all unfolds. You are literally coaching at, I think, every conceivable level, other than maybe like if you wanted to go coach YCCs, unless I missed that and you're also doing that.
No, I'm not. And I would love to.
I think that's something that you decided to stay out of, just because I don't think you have the time to do so.
That's right.
You've committed to so much across the sport, and it's a huge drain on your time, your effort, and everything else that goes into it. But yet, every year, you come back to it, you're eager to be part of it, and you're excited to take on the next challenge. What keeps you coming back every single time? Why do you continue to come back to the sport?
I think honestly, like, the teams that, you know, I've been a part of here in DC and in Philadelphia prior, like, we all end up coming out of that feeling really good about each other, and you know, just developing friendships that, you know, as I keep extending the years, I can see how some of them are still lasting. You know, that I met you in 2014, I was your coach or a teammate of yours, and then, you know, here we are 6-7 years on, and we're like, you know, traveling to each other's city or you know, hanging out during holidays or whatever. So, like, I just find that for me, it has brought, and this wasn't always the case, I wasn't always aware of how much this was doing this, but, like, it brings family to me, you know? My family's very small, you know, I'm the only child and all that, so I think for me, like, these are the brothers that I didn't get to have, right? So I think that's what it's become. I think that wasn't always my motivation. I think my motivation before was definitely to prove myself and achieve, you know, put an unquestionable stamp on something and say that, like, yes, I was able to accomplish this, you know, or I was able to lead this. So, but it's gotten past that because there's been enough of those validation moments for me that, like, you know, I don't know. I mean, a championship in club or college would be absurd, and that would be, like, unbelievable. But, like, I don't feel like I need that anymore to feel motivated to keep doing ultimate, or that it would stop me. I don't know how to say that. I think I wouldn't walk away from the sport if, like, oh, because I've accomplished this final thing. It's now become just that I love the process, and I love the people that I'm around, and I love what we're building. I love the legacy that's starting to build, you know, about some of my teams. You know, people are saying very good things. Programs are continuing to thrive, you know, if I'm still there, sometimes if I'm not there. And it just feels like, okay, like, I'm affecting a lot of people in a very positive way, and they're in turn affecting me in a really positive way. And I just feel, I feel good about that. So that's why I keep doing that. So I think that's it. I think that's the main reason. And I get to just see new stuff. I wouldn't have flown. Like, I probably wouldn't have left, you know, three states if it wasn't for Ultimate Frisbee. It has taken me to Canada. It's going to take me to Germany. It's taken me all across this country. And, yeah, I think that I would have had a very smaller worldview had I not been fortunate enough to get involved with the sport.
Deep, profound, and moving. Thank you, Daryl Stanley. That was fantastic, and I think a lot of people can relate to you about the family aspect of it. Yeah, it really is a community that so many people lean on, and, you know, I'm happy to hear that you're able to say that not only I think it's pretty clear, being a coach of a team, you've affected a lot of people in a very positive way, but it's great to hear that you also feel the same way about so many of the people affecting you in a positive way. So, Daryl, thank you very much. I won't take up any more of your time. Best of luck in Germany. I know you're flying out very soon, and excited to watch and see as well, once that wraps up, how the club season unfolds for you. Looking forward to it all.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate the time.
Strap the Puck to Daryl Stanley. Big thanks to Daryl for coming on the show and squeezing in some time to talk with me. He's flying out on the 4th later today for me to go out to Germany, so really appreciate him making some time to come on the show. Overall, though, super interesting guy to talk to, tons of Ultimate experience, and I think just a really cool story to hear how he went from basically being out of the sport to coaching at the pro level almost a year later, and then that slowly has just built into him now coaching an elite men's club team, coaching a very competitive nationally college team, and also being an assistant now on the U24 squad going out to Germany. So overall, though, just a kind of an incredible story, and also I think a real inspirational tale to everybody who's thought about coaching and getting into coaching. There's no reason not to. I think this is just one of those things where you kind of just have to dive in, and eventually you just learn as you go. You might not feel super prepared for it, but the thing is there is so much good that coaching young players can do and helping shape the next generation of the sport, spreading the sport in a lot of ways. There are so many local high school teams that probably are just missing a coach. That's the biggest thing holding them back from really taking that next step and making an impact at a larger level or being exposed to the sport at a higher level. So if you're on the fence at all about coaching, I know I'm preaching about this. I don't have a ton of coaching experience. I have a little bit. I have coached some youth club, but overall, I think, you know, the message here and what I took away from Daryl's story is there's never a bad time to get into it, and it's always something to keep your mind open to. If you have any interest into it, I'd say just go for it. Overall, though, I thank you once again to Daryl. Super, super fun interview. Lots of great stuff in there. Hopefully all you Ultimate Junkies really appreciated that. Looking ahead to future episodes, actually very excited to announce that I do have a guest lined up for this. Not quite sure the timeline yet, only because she will be competing out at the U24 World Championships. Anne Worth of the Raleigh Radiance, as well as Raleigh Phoenix and UNC Pleiades, will be joining the show following the U24 World Championships. Obviously, the focus will be talking about, hopefully, a gold medal for Anne, along with a lot of other stuff that she's accomplished over the last several months playing with UNC and the Radiance. So, really excited to be talking to her in just a little bit. So, make sure that you guys keep an eye out for that episode. As always, thank you, everyone, for supporting the show. You can check us out on social media, at The Ultimate Cast on Twitter, The Ultimate Podcast on Facebook. If you're looking for more ways to listen to the show is on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, really anywhere that you get your podcasts, you should be able to find our show. As always, I will ask you if you have any interest in it, please feel free to rate and review the show. The feedback is great for me. It also helps other people find the show. So feel free to go on, give us an honest rating. A lot of people will joke about what it is, but seriously, give me the feedback. It helps me determine what I'm doing with the show and helps me shape exactly what I want to be doing. And also the community, let's be honest, the community plays a very heavy hand in pretty much everything that happens in Ultimate. This show should be absolutely no different. So thank you everyone once again for tuning in. As always, you guys will hear from me again soon. Enjoy your 4th of July weekend.
Now's the time to travel and be with the people you care about the most. And at Holiday Inn and Holiday Inn Express, we're helping you be there for less. Save at least 25% at thousands of hotels worldwide if you book by September 24th. You won't want this moment to pass you by. So book today at holidayinn.com. Terms and conditions apply.
Now is the chance to use reliable energy to grow your money with the Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. Our new investment product offers competitive returns, no maintenance fees, and flexible online access to your money. Make the reliable investment in reliable energy. The Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. To find out more, go online to reliabilityinvestment.com. That's reliabilityinvestment.com.